Hey everyone, thanks so much for listening to my podcast. The podcast hasn't started yet. I just want to put in a quick note before I begin that there were a few technical difficulties this podcast, so the audio just kind of like cuts out and then cuts in again. So I will jump in and explain those, but I just want to preface that by saying if sentences don't finish, that's what's happening. All right, stay tuned for the rest of the podcast. My name is Kalyani Saxena, and this is my show, Cognitive Dissident. Good morning, everybody. Excuse the overly cheery tone. I'm just in a really good mood today. The weather is better. You know, I have a ton of finals I haven't studied for. Sorry, midterms I haven't studied for. And a bunch of homework I haven't done. But I'm here in this radio station, and I get to talk about politics, and the sun's out, and everything's gonna be okay. It's also April Fool's Day. I will not be pulling any pranks because I am fragile, and I can't deal with them, frankly. So I am going to have a very casual episode today. It's called Q and Say because I thought it was funny and more inventive than Q&A. And it's going to be very casual. Some people have sent me questions and I'm going to answer them. But before I get into that, I just want to say there will be another episode either coming out today or tomorrow that is definitely more important than this episode. Because it's going to be talking about India and Pakistan and the conflict that happened between them a couple weeks ago. So I'm just going to answer a couple questions, but please, please, please make sure you tune into that episode. Give that one your time and your attention over this one, because this is just me versus I'm going to have two guests on to talk about that. Hey, it's editing Yanni jumping in again. The audio cuts out because I started feeling unwell and I had to jump out and leave, but the rest of the podcast continues and I explain a little bit about what happened. So, hello everyone, I am back. Sorry for that. I thought I was Gordon Ramsay last night and decided to cook an Indian chicken dish. I'm not sure it went so well, folks. You know, I might be a little bit farther away from Gordon Ramsay than I thought. So aside from that, I'm just going to start over because I don't know who's listening. By the way, if you're listening to this show and you know who I am, you are contractually obligated to text me. Trust me, I'm a lawyer. Not yet, maybe someday, but tell me that you're listening so that we can talk about it, because while it may seem like I'm having a lot of fun, and I am actually just sitting in a room by myself for 40 minutes, which, as someone who likes to talk a lot, you might not think that's a problem, but I do want to have interaction with people, so tell me if you're listening. Okay, so I'm going to get started, restart everything. We can forget the Gordon Ramsay chicken incident. And so today's episode is a Q&Say, because it's a play on Q&A. I actually didn't have anything planned for this episode, and I was going to sleep in because my first class is at 11:20, but I just, you know, you guys, I'm dedicated to the political commitment that I made to this community, and I will, you know, I lost track of that sentence. What I meant to say is I was going to not do anything, but I thought, you know, people probably have questions about politics, and I'm going to try my best to answer them. And, you know, I just love you guys so much that I, you know how YouTubers are like, oh my god, I love you guys so much. So, like and subscribe. This is one of those moments, so like and subscribe. And I'm gonna just get started. Oh, wait, before I get started, sorry, this is supposed to be a casual episode, so if you're looking for more structure and you're annoyed by how frazzled I am, maybe this isn't the podcast for you. I just want to say that there is an episode coming out either today or tomorrow. It's going to be on India and Pakistan, and it's very, very important. I think that especially Americans should listen to it because often we don't know what's going on outside of the world. And I'm going to have two guests and we're going to have a somewhat serious discussion. And I think it's really important to listen to. So please do tune into that, even if you don't tune into this episode on the podcast, which if you're listening to this on the podcast, stop listening to this and go listen to the India Pakistan episode and then come back. Two episodes of me. So let's get started. My first question is from Paige Calvert. Hi, Paige. I know you're probably not listening to this until much later, but I love you very much. And her question is, what made you passionate about politics? This is actually a really interesting question because I think if you had asked anyone in my high school what I was passionate about, they would not have said politics. Like, this is a very recent development for me. If you had asked people what I was passionate about in high school, you probably would have gotten the answer, passionate about getting A's and not sleeping, because the International Baccalaureate destroyed my life. Don't do it, kids. Don't do it for your kids. So I actually wasn't super tuned into politics. I remember the 2012 election cycle. I had no idea what was going on. I didn't even know what the Electoral College was. I just kind of remember saying like, oh, people saying like, oh, Obama got this state and Mitt Romney got this state. And I was like, okay, what does that mean? But I wasn't really interested. And one of my best friends, Raina Vishwanath, she's going to laugh when she hears this because we're not very affectionate with each other, but she was always really into politics, American politics specifically, and would tell me, in the build-up to the 2016 election cycle, she was the one who was supplying me with all this information and all these articles, and I'd be like, oh yeah, I'll read it later, in the way that you are when someone sends you something and you have no intention of looking at it. And the election cycle passed me by. I was a Hillary supporter, as some of you might guess. I definitely was not a Donald Trump supporter. But I voted for Hillary just based on, like her mission generally, and I would like a woman in the White House. And of course, the 2016 election happened, and I was shocked. And I think the reason I was so shocked is because I didn't do any of the work for myself. I didn't do any research. I didn't read anything. I kind of just let whatever the media was saying spoon feed it to me. And because of that, I was taken aback. I also didn't know like anything concrete about Hillary's policies. I didn't know anything concrete about her criticisms. And I think it's important, especially in a democracy, that we have to be educated consumers. So that kind of pushed it in a way. And also, everybody knows that like after 2016, American politics kind of just became a poop storm, one might say, because this is public radio and I can't say the S word. Otherwise, we'll get fined. But it became a mess, and suddenly there was a lot more to pay attention to. And because I was so shocked about what happened in the 2016 election, and I think this is a common denominator for a lot of people who get involved into politics right now, the 2016 election and the shock that came with it was a really galvanizing force for me, because I was like, I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's going on at all. And most of the time, I was just really pissed. Like, I was like, I don't get how people can let these things happen. How is this legally allowed? And that means further reading. And also, my dad bought me a New York Times subscription, which 10 out of 10 would recommend, one of my best gifts ever. It started with just reading the news, and then I was working for Boston City Council, and I was reading the news every day. And then this year, I suddenly just found myself in the politics storm. So that's a really long-winded way of saying I wasn't initially interested in politics, but because of circumstances and because of the direction this country was taking, and because I think it's important to understand the people in power and how they got there and what they're saying, that's kind of what's pushed me, I guess. Sorry, that was a really long-winded answer, but it's a complicated answer. Okay, next question. Okay, I want to save the next question because I think that's a big one, and it's similar to another question. Okay, my cousin Riaz says, do one on gaming. I'm supposed to increase the volume, allegedly. I don't know what's... Yes, sorry. I'm once again having technical difficulties. Okay, I think the volume's fine. I can't go any louder than this because then we'll get an FCC violation. For people listening on the podcast, ignore this. Okay, my cousin Ria says, do one on gaming. I don't know what he means by do one on gaming. I think he means do an episode on gaming. Riaz, I don't know exactly what you want me to do with gaming. Maybe, yep, I don't know any politics about gaming. You might have to inform me on that. Okay, next question. Okay, this is an interesting question. So this is from Shinothra. We met in a Zumba class. That's irrelevant for this podcast, but I just wanted you guys to know that I do exercise from time to time. And her question is, does the Mueller report matter in the coming election season? You know, when I read this question, my first instinct... Okay, I was actually wondering... Before I get into that, I should probably explain... I think everyone knows a little bit about the Mueller report, but not a lot of people know exactly what was said in the Mueller report, so I just want to do a quick recap for everyone. The Mueller report was like an investigation into Donald Trump and his campaign and whether they had collaborated or colluded with Russia, or just generally investigating all the shady things and seeing if Trump would be indicted for anything. And recently, the way it works is, I'm probably going to do a full episode on this once we figure out more fully the implications, but Robert Mueller, the way the procedure works is he gave it to Bill Barr, and Bill Barr is the Attorney General for the United States, who Donald Trump put in office, and Bill Barr basically decides what the public gets to hear. And Mueller's report was allegedly like 300 pages, and Bill Barr, his report was 4 pages, which, in my humble opinion, something is missing. Perhaps 396 pages. But his conclusion was that Mueller said Donald Trump did not collude with Russia, and also that he couldn't rule out obstruction of justice. However, because now it's in Bill Barr's hands and Bill Barr was put into place by Donald Trump, Bill Barr is someone who really highly is an attorney who really highly privileges presidential authority and presidential power, and Bill Barr is not going to, as of right now, indict the president or further investigate charges of obstruction of justice. So that's kind of the bare minimum recap of what happened. So in terms of whether that report and the findings matter in the upcoming election season, I think there's two ways to go at this. On one hand, you could say, no, it doesn't matter. They didn't find any collusion between Donald Trump and Russia. There isn't really anything that's relevant, and we should all just let it go. I, however, think that might be a simplistic answer, especially because we don't know exactly what Mueller said. There's 396 pages that we aren't aware of, and Bill Barr is casting some doubt on himself because Donald Trump did put him in that position, he was chosen by Donald Trump to be in that position. And there are questions of loyalty and partisanship. And so I think unless he releases that full page, full 300 pages, wow, I just realized I said 396 pages earlier. I meant 296. I'm not a math major. Yeah, unless Bill Barr releases those pages, I think there's always going to be a shadow of doubt surrounding the Mueller report. So I think it could matter in the 2020 elections. But more importantly, I think it's going to matter in a way that's really interesting and maybe not one that most people would agree with me. Or maybe they would. I think that it's going to matter in that it's going to actually bolster Donald Trump's case or his campaign with his base, because pretty much ever since Bill Barr put out that 4-page report saying there was no collusion, he's been on his high horse crowing about how there was no collusion and this was a witch hunt, and it almost looks like it was a witch hunt, right? Like, everyone who was defending the Mueller report was thinking that something was going to come out of it, and we do have a duty to investigate something regardless of the results, but in Donald Trump's mind, the fact that they didn't find anything means that he is totally exonerated from everything ever. He literally thinks this is a free pass. Have you guys seen that Parks and Rec episode where someone goes up to Ron and he says, hey, you need a permit to be here? And Ron gives him a piece of paper and it just says, I do what I want. This is literally the exact same thing. So I think that this is going to make a really strong case with his supporters. And I think especially because they will look at this and say, all of your criticisms of Donald Trump just aren't true. Look at the Mueller report. Look at how it was a sham. Look at how it was a witch hunt. So I think it's actually, unfortunately, backfired a little bit. Unless something comes out of that report that we don't know about, I think it could backfire. I think it might matter in the election season, but not in the way that Democrats were thinking it would. I think it'll matter to their detriment rather than to their benefit. But that's just my analysis based on the few New York Times podcasts I listen to. Okay. And she also asked another question, which was, is the Democratic Party too left-wing for the rest of the country to follow? I love this question because it makes me a little mad, because I think it's a question that a lot of older Democrats are asking, a lot of establishment traditional Democrats, think Nancy Pelosi. But it's also an interesting question because I don't know the answer. Of course I don't. You know, I'm a 21-year-old trying to do political analysis on Monday at 9 a.m. But it's interesting because when we look at the Democratic Party, I think we're looking at a moment of change, especially considering this recent congressional cohort, where there's a lot of people in the Democratic Party for a long time who stayed very far away from socialism. Like, socialism, my professor, Laura Groton, shout out if you ever listen to this, was talking about how in the early 2000s, like, it was not okay to talk about, like, even up until the recession, saying the word socialism was not okay until the Occupy Wall Street movement. So that's a recent interesting change, and it's come, you know, with people like Bernie Sanders, who have been endorsing a lot of these leftist ideas, and along with that has come people, young people and women like AOC. For people who don't know who that is, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she won a surprise election for her congressional seat in the Bronx and has kind of become a surprise superstar in politics. Republicans love picking on her. Democrats feel very uncomfortable with how progressive and how left she is. And she's almost, a lot of people I think are blaming her for like a schism, whatever, within the Democratic Party. So there, I think it's an interesting question because I don't think the Democratic Party is necessarily too left-wing right now. First of all, I don't know if I agree. Yeah, the Democratic Party right now is actually splitting or splintering in the sense that there's a lot of conflict between the older establishment Democrats who are very uncomfortable with a lot of the socialist ideas that people like AOC and Bernie Sanders are trying to bring in. But there's also been a general shift towards the left. Like, I was listening to a podcast recently where it was talking about how a lot of the Democratic candidates in the field for 2020 have been endorsing a lot of left-wing ideas, which was surprising because that's not what the 2016 election was like. Everyone was like, Bernie, you're crazy, sit down, go home. And now people are still saying, Bernie, you're crazy, sit down, go home, but they're also using his ideas, which is fascinating to me how we've kind of just come to accept some of those ideas. So I don't think necessarily that the Democratic Party is too left-wing right now in the sense that not all of it is left-wing, but also whether or not, once again, it's me, Editing Yanni. I had to re-record because somebody called me in the middle of my recording, so it cut out, and that sucked. But the rest of the podcast continues, and I promise this is the last time you're hearing from Editing Yanni again. Okay, I'm back. I literally don't know what that was. Sorry, for people who are listening on the podcast, also people who are confused about what just happened in the last 3 minutes, somebody basically called me and it kept on cutting my recording off, and this is important because I am recording as a podcast. I've put myself on Do Not Disturb, so hopefully that doesn't happen again. I've lost my train of thought, but what I was trying to say was that a lot of the left ideas might not necessarily be too left for the rest of the country because a lot of them benefit people, like healthcare for all. But at the same time, America has a strong aversion to socialism, which is closely tied to communism. So frankly, I don't know the answer, but I think it's an interesting question. Okay. The next question is by Katie Twist. Hi, Katie Twist. She's one of my faithful listeners, also an absolute cutie, and totally going to be a bomb lawyer someday. So her question is, thoughts on Ilhan Omar being accused of anti-Semitism? So when I got this question, part of me was like, I don't know if I should answer this question, because it is really there's a lot, I want to preface this by saying I am not Jewish. I don't experience anti-Semitism. I cannot use my own experiences with racism to say that I experience anti-Semitism. So I'm going to try and give my opinion, but please excuse me if something I say is not entirely correct, and feel free to have a conversation with me about it, because I think it's important to have a dialogue about these things. I originally was not going to answer this question because I thought it was too controversial, but I think there's a few other machinery things going on that I feel like are important to acknowledge. So for those of you, some background. I don't know, I was listening to a podcast about this as well, but I can't remember the exact details, but the short and not so sweet of it is that Ilhan Omar made a few comments about Israel and people who are funding the United States, and that there was money going on, crossing hands, and that was part of the support for Israel. I don't have the exact comments, so I'm definitely quoting her wrong, but people received those comments as anti-Semitic because it seemed to be implying that there is a worldwide conspiracy of Jewish money funding people, which is a frequent anti-Semitic trope and is often used to perpetuate anti-Semitism. So that was the original context for that. She then doubled down on those comments, and she apologized and doubled down, and then the House tried to pass a bill calling for condemning anti-Semitism, but then people felt really weird about targeting a first-year congresswoman, one of the first Muslim women in Congress, and decided to make it a bill about all forms of discrimination, just like condemning all forms of discrimination. And GOP Congress members did not react super well to this because they wanted to be about anti-Semitism, and that's the short and not so sweet of it. So in terms of my thoughts about her being accused of anti-Semitism, I won't comment on her original remarks because I didn't fully understand until I read up why they could be perceived as anti-Semitic. I thought it was an interesting point that she was making, but I understand the perspective that a lot of people are coming from. I do want to talk about, however, how she has been targeted by a lot of GOP members of Congress. I think it's remarkable that she is, she said something, and which some may perceive as a legitimate comment and might not, she might not have seen the potentially anti-Semitic undertones of that conversation, but she is being targeted by them. And I think it's especially interesting when you consider the dynamic that she is one of the first Muslim women in Congress. And there is something to say about that. There are definitely other politicians who have made anti-Semitic remarks who happen to be male and most likely white and have not been I'm trying to think what the West word is, like, not prosecuted, or haven't been the subject of so much ire as Ilhan Omar. And I think that is interesting, specifically because when we look at a lot of these quote-unquote trailblazers, it's interesting how, sorry, I keep using the word interesting, it's fascinating how much of a focus there is on people like AOC and Ilhan Omar. Like, every single thing that they do is under a magnifying glass, and a lot of other politicians are allowed to make mistakes and allowed to move on from that, and I don't feel like Ilhan Omar is being offered the same chance. And I also think it's interesting how GOP members were really not okay with a statement condemning all forms of discrimination passing. Like, why was that upset? Like, it seems very clearly that they wanted to target Ilhan Omar. So I'm not going to pretend that I totally understand her comments and what she's saying, but I think there is absolutely a current of Islamophobia within the government and regarding that issue. And I'd be interested to see how it goes on the way that the rest of Washington focuses on freshmen women in Congress like AOC and Ilhan Omar. But, you know, I can't necessarily comment on the anti-Semitic nature because I personally haven't experienced anti-Semitism. Okay, let's see. Okay, the next two questions are tied together, and I think those are it for my questions. First question is from Alexa, who is a guest on last week's podcast, which you should, or last to last week's podcast, which you should absolutely listen to because it was super fun. And if you want to be on a guest on this podcast, let me know, or this show. So she asked me, what's your take on 2020? And my response to that is, I'm graduating in 2020. God help us all when I'm in the political field or out in the field trying to earn them buckaroos. But of course, Alexa is not asking about my 2020 plans. She's asking about the 2020 presidential race election season that's happening right now. It's almost funny when we talk about season, like the election season, it feels like it should be something exciting, like a debutante season where all the presidential candidates dress up in balls and have to answer questions. Well, actually they do that in the debate. They're not really in ball gowns, but it feels more like something exciting when really it's just two years of political nonsense. So if you really want to avoid the election cycle, don't listen to this podcast. Also, let me know whether or not you would like me to do a special series on the election. I was thinking of doing that over the summer. But yeah, so she's asking about my thoughts on the 2020 race. And I have another question from Navdeep. We interned together at Ayanna Pressley's office, and she is an icon and a grad student at BU who's graduating in May. Happy early congratulations. And she said, what's your take on the current presidential candidates? So those two questions are tied together, so I thought I would try and hit them both. I can't say I know all the presidential candidates because, frankly, I haven't read into all of them yet, but I have some thoughts on a few of them. And I'm going to talk about Democrats specifically because I have no idea who's running on the Republican side besides Donald Trump. I don't think anyone has declared. So the few candidates, and I can do a special series on each candidate if people are interested in that once the election season starts going, just let me know. So the few that I've gotten my eye on, interestingly enough, the first one is Kamala Harris. She has a really strong foot forward in the Democratic field, from what I'm understanding. She's fundraising a lot. People really like her. And I was initially really excited about her run because, you know, as an Indian American, I'm always looking for that hashtag representation. Mindy Kaling, where you at? You're all I have. but I don't know if a lot of young people are a fan because of her record as a prosecutor. And someone was telling me that she did put, and like I said, I haven't done my full research on this yet. Just been listening to podcasts. And someone said that she did put a lot of black people behind bars, which is interesting because we all know that the justice system is not necessarily the most perfect tool of the government. So I think that's something that needs to be further investigated on. But she has a strong foot forward in the field. But I will be curious to see if that front runner status stays. Another person people are curious about is Elizabeth Warren. If you had asked me even 2 years ago if I thought Elizabeth Warren would be a front runner in the race, I absolutely would have said so. I don't know necessarily if she's a front runner. She's definitely at the head of the pack because there's like 14 Democrats running. She's at the head of the pack, but she's not, you know, a super popular choice with the hashtag young kids because of the comments that she made about her Native American ancestry, which I can get into later if I do a special series on the election. But she is not young people are not a fan of her. Also, a lot of people think she's very similar to Hillary in like mannerism and presentation and style of politics, even though her political beliefs are probably, she and Bernie are the two most progressive candidates in the field. So I think that she would have been very popular even 2 years ago, but is less popular now. And I was listening to, don't take a shot every time I said, I was listening to a podcast during this show, but I was listening to a podcast and where the NPR did an interview with her and some of the front runners. And she actually had a lot of interesting concrete solutions. Like, a lot of people talk about progressive ideas, but she had concrete solutions. So that's really interesting to me from, like, a just a general politically minded person, that she's not just talking about ideas, she has plans. So that's interesting. Keep your eye on her. Bernie Sanders, surprisingly popular. I thought a lot of people would be mad because, you know, he had his time, he didn't make it. But like I said, things have moved more towards the left, so maybe it is Bernie's time. I personally don't think so, but that's up to opinion. And it raised a ton of money. I forget what the actual figure was, but I think it was something like $10 million in a week. I don't know, but it was a lot of money. Young people love Bernie. I think some old people are coming around. Not old people, but older people are coming around on Bernie. So he could be interesting to keep your eye on. I don't ultimately think he will win the primary, and I don't think he would win against Donald Trump, nor do I think Elizabeth Warren would win against Donald Trump. But things can change in a lot of months. You know, we all thought Donald Trump wasn't going to win, and here we are in this dark time. And who else? Beto. I was originally really excited when Beto ran. I like had this weird feeling in my gut where I was like, oh my God, Beto's going to win the primary and then he's going to win the general. Let's come back to this podcast in 2020, but I don't know why I got that feeling. And I think I got that feeling because he gives off really strong Obama vibes. Like, very big fan of bipartisanship. Looks a little bit like Obama. Do people think that's weird? I think he, like, looks a little bit like him. I don't know. Obviously, he's white, but just general vibe-wise. But I don't know if that model of bipartisanship is still as popular because we live in such a polarized political time where bipartisanship is really difficult and a lot of people don't want to hear that. They want to hear, let's just go back and fix what Donald Trump has done. And I don't think bipartisanship is as appealing a message as it was in 2008 or even 2012. So I think candidates like Beto are suffering. Also, he wrote that weird story about murdering children when he was 15, which a lot of people don't like. And I think Cory Booker also falls into the same camp where he looks like a really nice guy, and he is a really nice guy, but he falls into that same camp of really putting bipartisanship as a value above everything else. And that model might not necessarily work. And when he was pushed on it in that NPR interview, he kind of just kept on saying, like, okay, well, I can't be a cynic, I have to hope for bipartisanship. But he didn't really say any policies that would work that he would pursue if bipartisanship didn't work. Let me think. There's, oh my God, I always mess up this guy's name. Buttigieg. My friend Raina likes him a lot, I think. He is someone who's a lot younger. He might be more appealing. I think he's at the back of the pack right now, but because his name just isn't that famous. But keep an eye on him. Also, unrelated, or yes, related, but TBD to see whether it matters. Joe Biden still hasn't said whether or not he's running. So if Joe Biden enters the field, I think things are going to change because a lot of people love Joe Biden. So those are my thoughts on the 2020 election field based on my limited just recreational research. I haven't done any extensive research into it yet because the election cycle hasn't kicked into gear fully. But I have those thoughts and would love to do an election series over the summer, maybe separate from this podcast or part of this podcast. So let me know. This has been a Q&A. Also, let me know if you think I should be a YouTuber, because Q&As are a very YouTube thing, and when I was doing this, I was like, oh my God, can't wait to get my monetization, except I don't have any monetization because my listeners are mostly my mom and my dad. So thank you all so much for listening, and I will catch you probably again this week with my India Pakistan episode. Please, please, please listen to that. If you're just done listening to this, stop listening to this and go listen to that. It hasn't been recorded yet, but I anticipate it being a really fruitful discussion. So thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next. Oh, there will be no new episode next week because there are two episodes this week. All right. Bye. Love you guys.